The two-story house on Moxville Avenue in Salisbury, North Carolina, was home for me from the second grade until I went to college. I shared it with my parents, two sisters, a brother, and for several years my Mama Caldwell and my Uncle Frank. We had one bathroom with a clawfoot tub and no shower. I was rarely in it alone, the bathroom or the tub. We each bathed once a week. There was no time for primping, no full-length mirror, no cosmetics except lipstick, and no one seemed concerned about their looks. To this day, I can get ready to go out in 10 minutes. The only source of heat was hot air from a 3-foot-square floor register. It lay between the living room and dining room at the bottom of the stairs. My mother would get up early and uncover the coals in the basement furnace so that the rest of the family could dress in comfort around the warm register. All of us children had grate marks burned into our skin at one time or another. Each Christmas, we had a pine tree by the stairs in the corner of the living room. Santa Claus would leave each of us one present. I remember Larry's cowboy outfit, complete with a silver gun and a brown holster and a big hat. He and the neighborhood boys played cowboys and Indians whenever they could persuade someone to be an Indian. One Christmas, Shirley and I asked for a desk like the ones we had seen made for children. On Christmas Eve, we were looking out our window for a sign of Santa and saw instead Mother and Daddy carrying a mahogany desk across the yard toward the house. It was a beautiful piece of furniture, but certainly not what we wanted. That night, we stopped believing in Santa Claus and cried ourselves to sleep. The downstairs floors were covered with dark red carpet, which needed constant cleaning. It showed every speck of dirt, and our little dog, Poochie, marked his territory often. My dad's chair and ottoman were in the corner beside the radio. After supper, he would settle down there to listen to Burns and Allen, smoke a cigarette, and read the Saturday Evening Post. When he had a free hand, he would twist his hair. More than once, my mother had to rescue his finger with the scissors. There was a big window over the living room sofa, which allowed us a view of our porch and its ping-pong table and the neighborhood. My sister and I were particularly interested in watching two of the houses. We had boyfriends in both. One night around midnight, when Shirley and I were in our teens, we climbed out our bedroom window onto the porch roof, down the trellis, and went across the street to the Changes house. We threw rocks at the window we believed to be our friend's bedroom. A dozen rocks later, we heard a siren. A police officer grabbed my sister before she made it home. I hid in the shrubbery while he marched her across the street. Luckily, my uncle was just getting in from a date and said that he would take the matter up with our parents. We promised never to do that again. I don't think he ever told on us. We always had 3 full meals prepared mainly by the black woman, our beloved cook, who lived in the little house behind ours. There was plenty to eat, and meals were especially tasty when my grandmother helped in the kitchen. Biscuits, pies, turnip greens, fried chicken, and mashed potatoes were staples which kept the house filled with wonderful aromas. Cholesterol was never mentioned. In fact, my dad, through his 96 years, would eat only the yellow of the eggs, which he had every morning with his bacon or ham. We were not asked what we wanted to eat. All of us were expected to eat whatever was put in front of us. I became a member of the Clean Plate Club at an early age, and my overweight body is evidence of my active membership today. There was only one time that I refused to eat. I balked at a dish of grits. My parents were going out, and we had a sitter. She was told not to let me leave the table until I finished the grits. I was still sitting there looking at the cold, hard grits when Mother and Daddy came home. My sister Shirley and I were responsible for clearing the table and washing the dishes. When my parents had company over, they admonished us again and again for taking away the dishes with our dripping hands, rushing the guests so we could get on with what we wanted to do. We also had to clean the whole house and do the laundry every Saturday morning. My mother had 7 siblings and felt that she had done her share of housework long ago. Mother was a teacher and a concert pianist until she married. We always had a piano, and many nights she would play us children to sleep. I do not have her talent, even though she made me take lessons for 11 years, just in case. The only time I played in public was at recitals and for the junior high school Sunday school at St. John's Lutheran Church. My dad was the superintendent and insisted that I play the hymns, much to my embarrassment. That experience did come in handy when I was the organist for a mission church in Durham. But when the funeral home pump organ was replaced, so was I. It seemed that there were always pots and pans in the upstairs hall and bedrooms to catch the water that gathered in the attic when it rained. I remember holes punched in the ceiling to keep the whole thing from falling. It was rather pleasant to hear the drips, much like rain on a tin roof. Not pleasant were the late night phone calls from the police asking my dad to come bail out my uncle, who had landed in jail again. He drank too much. I don't remember the word alcoholic ever being mentioned. I often babysat my brother Larry, who is 7 years younger, and my sister Becky, who is 12 years younger than I. We would listen to The Shadow Knows in the dark living room, all snuggled together on the sofa for the scary parts. Mother was a favorite chaperone for the high school girls' trips to Carolina Beach. I didn't mind her going along except when she took Becky. The boys steered clear of me when they suspected she was my little daughter. The neighborhood children had lots of fun with nightly kick the can and ping pong games. I joined the boys in the football games until my 4th grade teacher called my mother and suggested that I should not participate in such unladylike behavior. I hated her from then on. Our house served as a recreation center until my high school years, when I gravitated up the street to the home of a friend whose asthmatic mother was confined to her room and whose father cooked for us any time of day or night. It was always open house for an older crowd of boys and girls. It was there that I played Spin the Bottle and other games, which opened up a whole new aspect of my life. But then, that is another story.